Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 51, recorded May 2nd, 2012. Bill Harris. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get my special offer, go to Stamps.com now. Click on the radio microphone and enter Triangulation at Stamps.com. Use the offer code Triangulation. It's time for Triangulation. Yes, I'm back. So the tripod is its leg now because it was kind of wobbly.
Well, Sarah, I did it without you.
Oh, and you had Sarah last
week. Yeah, we had Sarah and Zay Frank. It was great.
Oh, how fun.
It was so fun talking to him.
The show.
Yeah.
Tom Merritt is here of Tech News Today. And each week, Tom and I pick somebody interesting, unique, somebody making a big difference in the world. And that's one of the fun things about this show is we get to find out, we get to learn.
Yeah.
Today, joining us, Bill Harris, who is formerly CEO at Intuit, CEO at PayPal. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now has a startup called Personal Capital.
Yes.
Bill, welcome. It's great to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
What a great, I mean, talk about a CV. That's fantastic.
Well, when you get as old as I am, you know, it all builds up.
One hopes. It could go up or down, you know. You don't know. Some people, so I'm glad. That's really.
It could have been fry cook the whole way along, but thank goodness. Yeah.
Is your background in finance? Because it seems to be a common thread there.
Well, it has been for 20 years, but actually I started out in communications. I started out in the media business. I spent the 80s in New York for Time Magazine and U.S. News and places
financial
like that.
Financial reporter?
No.
What were you doing for that?
I was doing marketing and circulation.
Okay.
Direct marketing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And one of the cool things about the internet, of course, I mean, in those days, we were on Madison Avenue, we did all that stuff. In those days, the direct marketing line of the business was the stepchild.
Right.
It was just, you know, it was this little thing that somebody
right.
did.
Little moneymaker on the side.
The glamour was Mad Men, you know.
Right.
The big campaigns.
Taking
right.
ads, full page yeah, ad, yeah. yeah.
Right. But what's happened today, the internet has turned direct marketing into the driver. Everything is direct marketing.
Much to, unfortunately, to the detriment of the New York Times and Time Magazine and News. And they're all suffering because that's a different model, isn't it?
Exactly. How? Hugely different economic model.
So how do you, this is good. We'll just get a little sidetracked and then we'll get back to
finance. This is interesting.
What do you think, can anything save journalism in the form that's lived?
Not in the form that it is. Can anything save journalism? Of course.
Well, that's most
journalism. Journalism is more vibrant today than it has ever been. Can anyone save the traditional business model of a paper-based print publication? Of course not.
Display ads are history.
Well, display ads will always be part of the solution, but display ads are happening electronically as much as they do on paper.
And there's not as much money in an iPad version of the New York Times or Time Magazine.
Oh, there can be, sure. There can be at least as much money, particularly because your costs are so much lower.
There's no ink, no paper, no trucks.
Exactly. In fact, I would argue that the two industries most foundationally changed by connectivity have got to be media and finance.
Yeah.
Why those two? You can do the entire interaction electronically, both directions.
You don't need a physical good of any kind.
You don't need anything physical.
Don't need a building. Don't need HVAC. Don't need to pay for all that crap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to Amazon, e-commerce is one of the big things that we've done, right? Well, what can you do? You go to Amazon, you can order something electronically. You still need little brown trucks to deliver it.
And big warehouses all over the country.
Exactly.
Huge expense.
In media and finance, it's completely different.
Right.
It is all just intangible.
We're making bits.
Making bits.
Everybody in their pajamas.
Yes.
But they're all working.
Exactly.
It's
so
interesting.
So that the thing to take away is invest in the pajama business.
Right. That's where you need to put your money.
That's why Levi's made all the money, right?
So, I like what you said about journalism is more vibrant than ever, because I think that does get lost in the debate. And it was in the late 80s we started complaining, oh, now all the towns only have one newspaper and they all print the same headlines and all the stories are crap. And then the newspaper starts suffering and everybody gives, all of a sudden journalism is this glowing golden thing that we've all loved all our lives, and it's not true.
Exactly.
And there's lots of great journalism. There's also lots of crap. crappy journalism. There's just more journalism happening online, I feel like.
There's hugely more stuff happening today, and it's hugely more available and accessible. And it's the same way we talked about earlier, getting incredible educational opportunity out of YouTube. Yes, most of YouTube is pictures of cats falling in a toilet, but there are some gems there, if that's what you're looking for, the ability to get video content, to get print content, to get all this stuff is just explosive.
And yet our monetization models have not caught up. I mean, I think that's my concern with journalism.
I think they have. I think they have.
They have.
Yes, because so what is happening is old media tied to physical distribution is tumbling.
Yes.
New media, come on, the monetization of Google, of Twitter, of Facebook, of, you know, a thousand others that I could name, it's working. And so we get confused when we say, okay, Time Magazine or New York Times or whatever is having difficulty with their business model. That doesn't mean that all of media business model is broken.
Think of it just in tech journalism, the CNETs and the
You don't see PC Magazine anymore,
right.
But it's a website.
It's the magazines that are having the problem, not the websites. The websites are doing
right.
Well.
Right.
And the same thing will happen in finance. It hasn't happened yet. And there's some reasons for that.
You mean Goldman Sachs is doomed?
Goldman Sachs, I think the pile of gold that Goldman Sachs has got is so large.
There's nothing to go wrong
I don't think
for them.
That, yeah. But,
forget the man Sachs. It's just gold.
But the...
that's a line. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
want to touch
that.
No, he's on his own with that one.
Yeah, okay. All by yourself out there, Tom, on that limb. That's interesting. So what happens to the financial industry?
Well, you're going to go through a decade, maybe two decades, of deconstruction.
Yeah, that's what people notice, this disruption.
Yes.
And everything seems to be falling apart.
Right.
But really, it's the natural progression to the future.
It's the natural progression forward.
Yeah.
You're going from physical distribution and this 50-year, maybe even 100-year investment in brick and mortar, people, paper processes, offices around the country, strip malls, and, you know, to a point in time where, you know, why should you not be able to do everything and anything with your money right here with a couple of taps?
I can deposit a check by taking a picture of it now.
Right.
Now, that's still got a check. We're going to get rid of the check, too, and then we don't have to worry about taking a picture of it anymore.
But, look at Bank of America. They just laid off they announced laying off 30,000 people.
Gee, my Christmas.
Okay. Well, all that kind of thing is going to continue to happen.
Those are paper pushers. The same services are available, just more efficiently. Is that what you're
saying? More efficiently, less costly, but also with a better customer experience. If you can do the same thing anywhere from your phone or iPad or whatever it is, as you would otherwise have to get in your car and drive
someplace. Who goes to a bank anymore?
Nobody.
Nobody goes to the bank.
But
you go to an ATM machine to get cash.
I get really upset when I have to write a check. That's right. These guys don't take an online payment.
Can I just bump your phone?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, we've been using Square. There's the card case just down the street at the Acre
it's great.
Coffee. You walk in, you say, put it on my tab, basically.
It's great.
I love it. Okay, so we can see this happening. Do the same old
let
powers
before,
that be...
Let me just mention one thing before we go. The business about going to a bank branch... So, obviously, the world is moving to the point where you don't need this kind of thing,
right?
And you don't want this kind of thing. You want 24-hour instant access for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1970, when we have gone through ATM banking, telephone banking, online banking, mobile banking, the number of bank branches in this country has not decreased.
If you include all the electronic versions.
No. Nope. People.
Physical brick and mortar?
Physical brick and mortar. The number of physical brick and mortar branches has increased fourfold.
What?
Since 1970.
Why?
Because it is the momentum
that's counterintuitive.
Behind the old business model.
I see.
The way you acquire customers.
They're dead, they just don't know it yet.
Yes. That's right. That's right. Rather than one bank on every corner, you've got now four banks on every corner.
Right. Because they used to need to do that.
They used to need to do that in order to get the customer.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. But that's the deconstruction we're going to see over the next decade.
And you must have seen that writ large at Intuit. You saw it at PayPal for sure, electronic funds transactions. Do the same stakeholders stay in power, or are there, just as in the newspaper business or the journalism business, new... It's very hard for an old media company to reinvent itself because it's based on an old business model.
Yeah.
Is that the same for financial services?
Sure, and I think the answer is both. I mean, the large institutions in this country are not going to go away, but they're going to have to change significantly, that will be a slow and laborious process. And in the meantime, new entities will rise up and do new things.
It's an opportunity.
It's an opportunity, and that's, in fact, what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
We're trying to build something that is, at its heart, virtual.
And that's something I'm dying for, because we were talking before the show.
We're early adopters, though, right?
I've been a Quicken user since 1995, 96.
Yeah, what the hell happened?
And I absolutely loved it. That's
exactly what I am a huge Quicken user. What the hell happened?
Microsoft
what
money
was your
went away.
When were you at Intuit?
I was there from 1994 to 1999.
So we can't blame you, because
it was all good through those years.
Those are the good years.
Yeah.
You can blame me.
But you started it?
No, I did not start. No, okay. I did not. Scott Cook.
Yes.
Started
Quicken. No, I mean you started the change.
Oh, yes. No, it was completely my fault, yeah.
Okay. So why? You wanted to get away from software? I want somebody to blame. If it's not Scott, it's going to be you. And Scott's still involved, is he not? And
Scott,
he's
yes.
He's chairman. And
great guy and very innovative, and he's still very much involved in Intuit and what they're doing. But here's
Did
fundamentally...
Did you see a change in course, though, in those late 90s?
Well, here's fundamentally what I think's happened to Quicken. Mm-hmm. Quicken was a great product, remains a great product, but it is no longer the product that most people want. Why? It's desktop software.
Right. And they don't know it yet, by the way, in some cases.
A lot of people don't know it yet.
Yeah.
But what you really
want... I started
using
Mint, and Intuit acquired Mint.
Yep.
And it makes... And strategically, that made a lot of sense, mm-hmm. because it's these services online.
Yeah.
Why should I balance my checkbook? Mint will do it for me.
Right. But Mint doesn't have all the features I want that a Quicken desktop
does.
Well,
they won't print checks.
But then Quicken doesn't have all the features that Mint has. And I know that now they're trying to integrate them, and that's a good step, but...
But I think in the late 90s, it became obvious that this internet thing was taken off.
Yeah.
Web would make sense that all the transactions could occur on the web. Financial services, as you say, there's no physical goods.
I think it's really hard for an organization to change their fundamental stripes.
It is. They're based on a certain
They're based on a certain thing,
model.
And it's particularly troublesome or difficult to do if you are good at what you do.
Yeah.
And they are the best desktop financial publishers out there. It's really hard to do. If you look at, you know, almost everybody has had a really hard time with these big paradigm changes. The few that have made it work are people who are faced with a near-death experience. Intel was in memory chips.
Right.
They went. The Japanese cut their legs off, and they were forced to make a bet-the-company decision to go with the x86 architecture. That saved the company, and, you know, Apple the same way, right? They were about to die,
mm-hmm.
and that allowed them to make this kind of a significant
Those
change.
Those are the exceptions that prove the rule. I think of Kodak, which did, in fact, realize digital was coming,
yeah.
but couldn't make the revenues that they were making in developing and selling film.
It's almost impossible because of two things. First of all, you've got this big business. If you're the leader in the old way,
right.
you've got this big business.
You're entrenched.
That is, your people think about it, you're the paradigm, and you're making so much money.
Right.
And usually the new paradigm comes at half the price, a tenth the price, and you'd be slitting your own
throat. Hence the difficulty the New York Times faces.
Yes.
They're hooked on the old business model. It's a drug.
And New York Times, actually, to give them credit, is one of the best at
They're trying just like Kodak
adapt.
Tried, but
they
it's
get
very
out there
hard.
And they were experimenting with digital versions of the paper online in like the late 90s. They've always been experimenting
with
it. But
they do a great job. They do a great job. But it's the same kind of problem that you have if you're a major financial institution and you're doing online banking, let's say. The online banking becomes a barnacle attached to the side of this behemoth. It could be a great barnacle, but it's still a barnacle.
And the worst thing that could happen is it could cannibalize your big business.
Yes.
You don't want that barnacle eating you out from the inside.
That's right.
So you can't even really give it the resources you'd like to give it because it's too
Sounds
risky.
Painful.
Yes. So did you see this happening at Intuit when you were there? I mean, was this...
You mean to the financial services industry?
Yeah,
or
just in general to Intuit, specifically and in general to the financial services. You must have to make the leap to PayPal.
Yeah, so to some extent, Intuit always has been a great desktop software company, and that made it difficult to move to the server
right.
or what the cloud. We didn't call it the cloud at the time.
Client, server, computer.
Yep.
Let's take a break. This is fascinating. We're talking to Bill Harris. We're going to talk about what the future of financial services might look like.
Yeah.
What you're up to with Personal Capital, which is, as I understand it, and you're going to set me straight, kind of a mint for business.
Not quite.
Nope. Okay. We'll get a better characterization. In fact, we'll get a demo. So would I use it, maybe?
Yes.
All right. Good, because I'm looking for something better. But first, we're going to talk about how the post office is getting disintermediated. How about that? With Stamps.com. Actually, the post office welcomes it. They love the idea of you printing your own postage with your own computer and your own printer. You don't need special inks. You don't need a... Don't tell Pitney Bowes. You don't need a postage meter. You just need an account at Stamps.com. And when you get the account, by the way, they're going to send you free this USB scale. You plug it into the computer, Mac or PC. You throw the letter, the package on there. The software does it all. It prints it out. Beautiful stamp. You could put images in there, too. I mean, it's gorgeous. It also, if you're doing priority mail, express mail, international mailing, if you're an Amazon or eBay seller, it takes the data from the computer, prints it out, too, so your forms are all filled out automatically. You use QuickBooks, no problem. I know it's an Intuit product, but that's okay. QuickBooks, no problem. In fact, who knows, maybe someday Personal Capital will work as well. And it just prints that all out. You get discounts the post office won't even offer if you go to the post office, up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. And then an amazing thing happens. A uniformed employee of the federal government comes to your home. They come to your home and they or your business and they pick the stuff up. You don't even have to bring it to the post office. The mail carrier comes and gets it. You can even schedule free pickups. I mean, this is a perfect example of what you're talking about. You still bet. Have some physical goods. You got to mail stuff. But why should you be doing the dirty work?
Don't need all the buildings.
Let them do it.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Go to stamps.com. Now, you see right there, $80. No, wait a minute. I know that's tempting. But I'm going to take that $25 and make it $55 in free
it's
postage.
Magic.
Just enter the word triangulation. You can see we've entered the other codes from the other shows. But the word we want, yeah, you don't even have to type it. Just use your drop-down menu. Try there. Magic. $80 goes to $110. $55 in free postage. You get the scale. You get the supply kit. You get a four-week trial. All you have to do is go to stamps.com and use our offer code triangulation. When I started Twit, we were still making. We were still buying stamps. That's how small Twit was. We obviously use stamps.com all the time. In fact, every time I do the ad, I steal the USB scale. And Jordan's going to kill me, so I'm not going to take it anymore. Jordan gets to keep it. We love it. You will love it, too. Stamps.com. Talk about the new way of doing business. Give it a try. And don't forget to use the offer code triangulation. Bill Harris is our guest on Triangulation. Today we're talking about, I think this is really, you make such a good point. If there's no physical good, there's no reason to have brick and mortar.
Yes.
And yet banks are opening branches. What the hell? Nobody wants to go see a teller, do they?
No.
So what's going on? They just haven't figured it out.
Well, it's the perpetuation of the historical business model.
Yeah.
And people are starting to figure it out. And certainly there are some intense pressures to reduce the cost structure.
I remember 10 years ago in the early internet boom, there were virtual, kind of internet-only banks.
Yes.
And they didn't take off.
Yeah.
I think people felt weird about it. Like, well, where does it exist?
They actually did. There were a number of them that took off. ING Direct.
ING was originally digital?
ING Direct was originally...
That was their digital play.
A completely digital play. A guy named Arkady Coleman started it in Canada. Even before the internet, it was just a telephone bank. And then it was telephone and internet.
Then
in 1999, 2000, he brought it down to Wilmington, Delaware, started it here, and it's been completely electronic.
I stand corrected.
Another one, one of the people who works at Personal Capital is Rob Forger. He was a co-founder of Everbank.
Yeah.
And Everbank was similarly...
I remember them, yeah.
Non-brick and mortar. But you're right, still... To this day, the large amount of bank deposits remain in banks with physical locations.
Do you know the figures? I mean, what a percentage of transactions now are completely digital? How many people are still bringing their paycheck to the bank and depositing it?
Relatively few.
Really?
So
most people are getting direct deposits.
Most paychecks are direct deposits. Yep. Most purchases are
credit card or debit card.
Yeah. They're still... a lot of check, but even that check, most of it has, at one stage or another, becomes an electronic check.
Right. Right.
I think Walmart recently said 19% of their in-store transactions are cash, which is why they want to do that thing where you can order online and then go to the store to pay in cash, because it's a big enough percentage for them. But even that's...
When does cash go away, Bill? Cash has got to go away, right?
Yeah, I think cash goes away, but here's what has to happen. First of all, you have to have a wallet that is electronic.
Right.
And what is that? Well, it's your phone.
Right.
Okay, so you got your phone.
Google Wallet. Apple will probably do something like this. Everybody thinks Apple should get into this business.
And all sorts of people will do this kind of thing, yeah.
Yep.
And so
will
that,
it be the financial
wallet.
Services company that win this one?
I don't think so.
It will be the Googles of the world.
I think it will be the tech companies, because they're the ones who can create the software, the wallet, all that kind of thing. And then the other piece of it, so you need the wallet, then you need the payment rails to run on. And one of the big reasons that the existing payment rails, mainly credit card, will not work is they're too expensive. They were built in a day when what you had to do was run around and collect paper all over the place and put it in airplanes and fly it around.
You'd have that thing. They go, chick-chick-chick-chick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
You still see those when bands sell merchandise.
Yeah.
But no longer because Square and people like that.
Exactly. Yeah. They're being
replaced.
That's
why there's that 5% transaction fee.
It's actually, it's typically 2 to 3%.
Okay.
1.5% to 2% in physical locations, 2 to 3% in electronic locations or online.
It's higher online.
It's higher online.
Shouldn't it be lower online?
Well, it should be, yeah. It should be lower everywhere. But the reason it's higher online is that they believe there's more of a fraud problem because
so
they don't actually
the
see the card. It's called card not present.
Right.
But think
that's
about,
ironic because actually that's probably the exact opposite of where all the fraud occurs. Is,
well,
it's getting skimmed and the, you know things
it,
like
it
that.
Sort of depends on type of industry and all that. But here's the thing, call it 2%. Think about how many credit card transactions are done in this country.
Yeah.
Call it half of the consumer transactions.
Sure.
A 2% tax on every transaction.
Billions.
It's billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be because really all we're doing at PayPal, all we were doing was moving, if you're paying money to you, it is a database, decrement this, increment that, we're done.
No labor.
Yeah.
We're done.
Most of the money, I would imagine, goes to fraud and things like that.
Not even fraud. No, most of it is distribution and paying all of the players in the, there's customer acquisition.
Distribution out of the PayPal network, you mean? Or
so in the broad scheme, PayPal and others, distribution meaning acquiring customers.
Okay.
If I'm a credit card company, I'll spend a couple $100 to acquire a customer, and then I'll give them all sorts of loyalty points, and that's where the cost
is. Toasters. It's all about toasters.
It's toasters. I love this. I heard in 2008, somebody was doing this mock ad that said, buy a toaster. Get a free bank.
That's a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's right on the right scale. No, we move just ourselves. We move over $100,000 a year through PayPal, and they take their whatever percentage. It's a significant amount of money.
Yeah. So what has to happen in order to eliminate cash is that you have to reduce the cost down to a fraction of a percent, which is actually what it should be, given that it's just a little electronic transaction.
And microtransactions, right? One of the issues is that because of the fees and the processing costs, they don't want to do nickel and dime transactions.
That's right.
But we need nickel and dime transactions for, all of this would work so much better if we could do that.
Yes.
And the fees and the processing costs shouldn't be as high as they are,
right?
Is what you're saying.
So is that good?
Right. So it's just a transition problem. We just need to get everything onto the internet.
So who's
onto the internet, and then we have to work through either the existing networks have to lower their costs,
mm-hmm.
or new networks will spring up with lower costs. And I think the answer will be both.
Yeah. Because one of the place that where I take my dog during the day, I asked me like, do you know any good replacements for this credit card terminal?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm not up on those, but check out Square.
Square.
He looked at it. He's like, well, the percentage is less because there's no monthly fee.
Right.
He's like, but I don't pay for debit card transactions. And Square makes me pay the percentage no matter what I'm running through there. He's like, so it's still cheaper for me to keep my little box because of that. It's just
all transitional issues.
I'm sure there's tons of little transitional issues like that have to be wiped out.
At PayPal, so one of the most difficult things is to establish a new network, particularly when you are in competition with an existing network, because the power of a network is that everybody's a member.
Nobody's going to leave Facebook.
Right. And so for a payment network, what you have to do is simultaneously solve the chicken and egg problem.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get the payors and the payees simultaneously to get everyone there.
Doesn't that promote the incumbents? Doesn't that mean Visa is going to win?
Yes, that is the reason that there are a small number of networks and they are so powerful.
Right.
PayPal, how in the world was PayPal started?
Yeah.
Only because there was an unserved market,
right.
Online auctions.
Ah.
and online auctions.
eBay, essentially.
eBay.
Yeah.
That is the single reason that PayPal got started. Yeah. And it was a market that the credit card companies would not serve,
right,
because they couldn't make an individual seller into a credit card merchant, an acceptance point. So it was the absence of existing networks that allowed PayPal to flourish.
It's not going to happen that often.
Not going to happen that often.
Yeah. Wow, this is great stuff. I'm fascinated by this. So, again, you think money will go away at some point? When this, so these wallets...
You mean cash money,
cash
paper money.
I mean,
sure.
Essentially, once micropayments are doable,
yeah,
we need that because I have to be able to buy a pack of gum,
right,
by waving my phone.
Yeah.
Once this NFC, I guess, will it be NFC? What is your prediction?
I don't
on
think
this?
NFC.
You
no.
don't think so?
Because NFC requires hardware. It's the same chicken and egg problem.
That's the phone with the near field chip in it that you wave it. It's like a pay point.
Right.
You wave it. So how will we do this?
Well, the reason that I don't think NFC will take off is that it's the same chicken and egg problem.
Right.
You've got to get hardware into the POS machines. You've got to get hardware into your phone.
It's a big expense. Capital
big
cost.
Expense, and it take a long time, and you don't have ubiquity. There are really all you're trying to do is identify the payor to the network.
It's an authentication problem.
It's an authentication problem. It's exactly right. As a matter of fact, in my 20 years of doing financial technology, I have ended up starting three different authentication companies. Why? Because increasingly the actual transaction becomes easier and easier and easier. It's just bits in a database.
Right.
The hard part is knowing that this instruction you're receiving remotely is legitimate.
Yeah,
and that's the fraud issue. That's just the simplicity of a transaction issue.
Right. Trust.
So, what do you think? Right, how are we going to solve this?
Well, I think the solution is right here.
Public key cryptography?
Well, sure, cryptography is part of it, but the most important thing is the authentication process. Authentication has always been based on factors of authentication.
Right.
It's the three classic factors: something you know, like a secret or a password, something you have, like a token or a birth certificate or a driver's license, and something you are, a biometric, could be a fingerprint. Okay, what we try to do is combine multiple factors in order to get high security. So an ATM card, for instance, if you're doing ATM, a transaction, you need your card and your PIN. If somebody shoulder surfs your PIN, well, they don't have your card. If somebody steals your wallet, they don't have your PIN. That's how you get security. So we need two-factor authentication. The password is fine for something you know. We need something you have. Well, what does everybody have?
A cell phone.
A cell phone. So the cell phone is the second-factor authenticating token of the new age.
Google Authenticator, for instance, which generates like a VeriSign token. It generates a token.
Well, that's why Square works so well.
Is Square going to have Square's in good position to win this?
I wouldn't say win.
But be big.
But be big, yes.
Because you need the merchants to all adopt new hardware to take Square. That's the gating factor.
Now, the threat to Square is Verifone, Visa, and everybody else who wants to move in on it. In fact, they're all doing Squares, right?
Sure. Or mechanisms where you don't even need a POS machine.
Yeah, let's not have a POS machine.
Right. I mean, really, all you need to do, because you've got this phone, all I need to do is make that authentication work.
Can we just wave our phones at each other?
Yeah, you can. There's a bunch of ways you can do it.
You don't even need to wave.
Yeah. You could do
Square,
this.
Square, you just walk in. Card
That's
case,
right.
you just
don't
walk
take it out
in.
Of your pocket.
Yeah.
Right. How about this? You come in and somebody just says, okay, here's the URL. All I have to do is type in the URL.
Yeah.
And then I go to that URL. I authenticate to the network with my phone and say, yes, go. I didn't need NFC. I didn't need any kind of waving. I didn't need anything.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm doing, and here's another thing. You talk about cash, like how are we going to get rid of cash? In the 90s, the notion was remotely stored value, Mondex, DigiCash. You would have coins that you would have on your machine, and I'd give you the coin and all that kind of stuff. It was brain dead. Because
it was based on the old model of physical cash.
Old model of physical cash. It was also highly susceptible to a catastrophic failure.
Right.
And if there was a catastrophic failure, the entire house of cards.
Values wiped out.
Right.
That's what happened to Bitcoin not so long ago.
I didn't hear that. I didn't know.
Do you like Bitcoin? Do you think that that's an interesting play?
I think Bitcoin is a very interesting play from a philosophical point
extra-governmental,
of view.
It's an experiment. Yeah.
Extra-governmental currency
yes.
system.
Yes. Do I think it will ever become a significant part of the monetary landscape? Yeah. No.
But will all of this be governmental?
Yeah, most of it.
Aren't we going
no,
global?
No. Let me put it this way. There will be many pseudo-currencies.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook credits,
right.
All these things, loyalty points.
Currency is just a form
Canadian
of exchange.
Tire.
Yeah, Canadian Tire, wonderful
yeah.
currency.
Yeah. But they will all ultimately be convertible and tied to
the
governmental, you know, the dollar, the whatever.
Not the gold standard.
What about
maybe,
silver certificates?
Yeah, silverback dollars.
So you think it will still be governmental? It's
yes.
not
good.
I mean, that's one of the
yes.
points of Bitcoin is to transcend the governmental.
Yeah, I know. And philosophically, I think that's very interesting.
It's cool.
Yeah, I don't think it's really going to be practical in my lifetime, but I'm getting towards the end. So, you know,
no, come on. You still got teenagers. That means you're
singularities there. You're going to be fine.
So it sounds like you have spent your most of your career kind of trying to plot what is obviously going to be a major revolution.
Yeah.
And look ahead just far enough to be where it's going.
Yes. So in that revolution, you know, it's essentially money meets tech.
Right.
That is the revolution.
It's huge.
It's huge. And when you think about and this comes back to what I'm doing today, personal capital, you asked what it was.
Yeah.
It's a service for people or households with complex finances, which means, you know...
Oh, man, do I have complex finances.
Yeah.
I'm a single proprietor, LLC. It's all passed through. I got the most complicated... If this works for me, it'll work for anybody. So is it kind of like Mint? Is that the idea? Why don't you actually have it there. We could take a look at it.
I'll pull it up in a second,
sure.
But I'll just describe what we're doing. So we're really focused on people who have some money, some
massive
investments.
Massive net worth.
Not massive, but enough to worry about.
Okay.
And who are also thinking about retirement. If I retire at 65, I still need to support myself and my family for probably 30 years.
Would you say if you've got more than a checking and savings account, you probably this is the arena that you're working in?
You betcha.
Yeah.
And if you've got more than just a checking and a saving account, you've got an investment account, you've got most people have multiple investment accounts, they have multiple credit card accounts, they've got mortgages,
now,
they've got all this stuff.
Because you're cherry picking, these are the guys that you can make the most money off of, or
these are the people that we think we can do the most for.
There's the most value.
Unserved market.
Yeah, it's an unserved market, and it's a market that is desperately in need of something.
I agree.
I also tried to start a company called MoneyCard back in about 5 years ago. MoneyCard was going to be a very simple card and telephone solution for the underbanked, right? Very different marketplace.
Well, in fact, our chat room says, it's easy for you guys to talk about a cash-free economy. I'm a poor guy. I have to live with cash.
Right.
So this is an unserved economy. These are the poor people who have to go and cash checks at these check cashing
That's
services.
That's exactly
and they
right.
20%.
And the whole thing, not 20%, it's 500%.
Because they charge the
interest,
loan shark level interest.
Yes, and so the whole notion there was do something very simple, very convenient, very secure, and turn that whole process into something that's a relationship oriented as opposed to transactional.
You were ahead of your time.
Yeah. Well, the reason I shut that one down, and we never launched, but we were working on it, and in 2008 when Freddie and Fannie went in the drink, the next day I said, this is not the time to be starting a subprime lender.
But the time will come, I think.
I think the time is already here. I wish I was doing it, but I'm not right now, so I'm focused on this affluent core of households.
The 1%.
It's not the 1%.
The 5%.
No, it's the 20%.
Okay.
It's
good.
The 20%, and it's not the 1% because those people have...
They got all the help they need.
They've got plenty of solutions.
Yeah.
But
it's actually true. The middle is worse. It's the worst place to be if you have complex finances, but you don't have enough money to have somebody take care of it for
That's
you.
That's exactly right.
It's a sucky position to be in.
That's right. We are trying to give the kind of sophisticated and highly personalized wealth management solution formerly reserved for multimillionaires and make it available to the rest of us.
Right. Wouldn't that be
What is the biggest problem? The biggest problem, you know, I've been running around building point solutions for years. The biggest problem is not any one specific issue. It's fragmentation. Your money is all over the place. You got different kinds of money at different institutions. And in some ways, I and my friends have made it worse because we've also created little islands of technology all over the place to do this or that or the other thing. So what we're trying to do here is bring it all together. Bring together all of your money in one place with all of the functionality you need to see it, understand it, and manage it.
How's this different from Mint?
Well, Mint, we do a similar thing in that we aggregate information on accounts.
Use Yodlee or
yes.
Yes, you do. Okay.
I'm on the board of Yodlee.
See, I was nervous about Mint for a year until somebody explained to me it uses Yodlee, which is the same back end basically that the bank's using. So they don't know any more than everybody else already knows about me.
That's right.
And that gave me the confidence to say, okay, well, I can give my accounts.
Yes.
So you use the same kind. So that's something that should reassure people. But still, why should I trust Bill Harris and give him all of my information?
I look like a trustworthy guy.
You got a nice shirt.
That's always the first
sign.
Wearing
a tie.
Don't trust him. He looks too trustworthy.
Good hair. Very nice hair. Why wouldn't you trust him?
Here's what we do on trust. Trust is crucial in any financial relationship, and this is, I think, perhaps one of the bedrock reasons why the financial industry has been much slower to move to new paradigms than the media industry.
It's why they built giant banks with columns, and because you wouldn't trust somebody that could build a building like that.
Exactly.
Except they're all antique stores on Main Street. I don't know if you noticed.
I saw that, yeah.
Seed Bank.
there's the biggest bank in Petaluma. Beautiful Corinthian columns and a pediment and everything. It's selling seeds now.
So, I saw that.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop
it's
in on the
way
back.
You want heirloom heritage seeds. Fantastic. Loved it. But you're right. I mean, the trust is a big issue.
So here's how you can do it. You establish trust either through experience or reputation. Now, reputation, you could have been around for 150 years. We weren't. Or you could spend $150 million bucks on advertising, which we're not going to do.
So.
Okay. But that's how, you know, you can do it through reputation.
Yeah. I think we are a little more sophisticated. So maybe we got another way. Let's see.
Experience. In other words, every time that I have an interaction with you where I deliver what you expected, then there's an experience point.
Yeah.
There's a little trust point.
Yes.
And for
that's
me...
That's the modern way of doing it.
That's the modern way to do
yes.
it. Why do you trust Google when you go and, you know, plug something in? Well, because you did it, you know...
Over
the first
time.
You just did it once and took a look, right. And then you did it right. another time, and pretty soon, if you have frequency... You can build this trusting reliance relationship very quickly. And so that's what we try to do. We try and get this information and give it to people in a dashboard so they can see their entire financial future right there. And then if they come back often enough and if they start to rely on us for the data, then we build that towards a trusting relationship for actually helping them manage their money.
And is this a similar setup to Mint where it's free, but
yes.
you make money by... advising me on services I could use to save money, or
it's similar in that the aggregation function
is free.
Yeah, it's very different, however, and this is why I don't think we're competitors to Mint, and I think in fact we're competitors more to the Schwabs or the Bank of Americas or whomever's of the world. The real difference is that Mint, which is a great product, is focused on is software. Right, and it's trying to get people to use the software.
That's right.
And then the way they make money is they put advertising or lead generation or things like that around it. Okay,
in a nice subtle way, but that's how.
Yes, they do it very elegantly.
They do it very well. Yeah,
We are fundamentally a financial service. We are trying to help you do things with your money, move your money, store your money, invest your money. And we use software as well, of course. But we're using software not as an end. But as a means to an end. Mm-hmm. And the end is actually not to see the information about your money, but to actually manage.
So you're saying personal capital is made of people?
Yeah. Well, it's made of, yes, and we
are
do.
Are there financial advisors on the other end?
Yeah, we have full-time, on-staff financial advisors who will, you know, pick up
and
the phone.
And I pay for that service?
You pay for that optionally.
Okay.
Most of it is free.
Okay.
But if and when you decide, hey, all of this, you know, what I'm using so far makes sense, it helps me, and I want to go the next step and have you actually help manage my money, then you'd pay in the same way that you would pay a financial planner.
CFP.
And do you have a leads model too, or is it just the financial planner?
No, we don't have.
See, that's the critical point.
We do no advertising. We don't need do no lead generation. We're really focused on being always. On the customer side, telling the customer what's best for them, as opposed to trying to make money by sending leads one place or another, or even worse, what typically happens in the financial services industry, pushing product.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, of course, the issue of trust at this point. And that's the reason that you might want to look at somebody besides Schwab, because do you trust this guy? Is he trying to sell you something that he's going to make a little extra money on? So how do we know?
How do we know that you can trust us?
I can trust you.
Well, actually, it's very interesting. Our regulatory schema, we are not a bank, we are not a broker, Banks and brokers are, in fact, salespeople.
Right.
And they are paid to sell whatever the institution wants them to sell.
Right.
We are an RIA, a registered investment advisor.
Okay.
We're registered. We're governed by the SEC,
yeah.
And we have a fiduciary obligation, a legal duty, to act in our customers' best interest, not in our own. And so I can be taken to court.
Right.
If I push product on somebody that is not in their best interest. And what we've got is this open architecture. We will put you in anything and everything because we are being paid by the client
right.
to serve as the client's advisor, not be the broker and push product.
All right, but you've spent your entire career thinking about the future. This is one part of it, but
yeah.
What other big changes are ahead? We're almost out of time, so we're going to do this quickly. But what other big changes?
You mean in the
financial sector? What draw me a landscape 5 years, 10 years from now?
Yeah, so I think the two big changes, we've touched on them both.
Yeah.
The two big changes.
Cash is gone.
I don't think actually cash is gone. I think cash will be around for a long time.
Okay.
It's just smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
But the two big changes are the move from physical distribution of all financial services to electronic or virtual distribution through a variety of interfaces and all that. Our advisors, you can't visit them.
They're all over, I'm sure.
Well, they're actually in one place right now.
Okay.
But we go by chat or video chat, or I'm sorry, that's my phone.
They thought you were.
They're calling. They're saying, don't tell them where we are.
We're in a secret bunker. Video chat with these
guys.
We
use video chat. In fact, you can pick up your iPad or something like that, and you press the button and FaceTime them. And
that's
cool.
How cool is it not only to be able to have that interaction without driving someplace,
yeah.
but also to be able to have that interaction? The best thing we do is on the web. We'll co-browse. You're looking at your data. You've got a picture-in-picture of a two-way video. And so you've got this interaction, a video interaction, with this data-infused richness
right.
of both being able to look at the
same
thing.
That's kind of cool.
It's very cool.
So instead of just going on faith, he can show me. She can show me. Here's the charts. Here's what we see.
Yeah.
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 That's cool.
So the one thing.
That's one.
The one is the tech.
Yep.
The other thing is customer centricity. And, you know, every company in the world will say, oh,
customers first.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But, in fact, most of the financial services industry is not customer-centric, it's product-centric.
Profits first.
Well, profits, but even thinking about this, it's product-centric.
Yes.
In other words, you've got somebody who is selling mortgages, somebody yep. who's selling refis, whatever it is. They're trying to sell as many of that particular product
right.
from that particular institution as they possibly can.
Right.
We say, no, rearrange it so the customer is the middle, surround the customer with all of their money of all types at all institutions, and then act as the customer's advocate. And I think that's the other model that's going to, over the next couple decades, hopefully sweep the financial services world.
And the key there is
yeah.
your customer is the client. Your customer isn't the advertising
exactly.
person or the leads generation model. Because
we're not working for the advertiser. We're not working for the pushing product. We are working for and being paid by the client.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you luck. I think it's a great idea. And you certainly have the track record. Personalcapital.com.
Yes.
Bill Harris, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would love
to
because I think we just kind of got started in the I'm very curious about how this is going to play out. It's a brave new world.
It is.
And I think ultimately it has to be global in some way that transcends what we're doing right now.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's for another conversation for another day. Bill Harris is at personalcapital.com. We are at Triangulation, which is twit.tv/TRI. If you want to catch up on previous episodes, we've got a bunch of them now. All of them available, audio and video, at twit.tv. Of course, if you want, you can watch us live the minute Leo gets here, somewhere around 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays. Let's see, speaking of international, that'd be 2300 UTC every Wednesday. Don't forget to catch Tom Merritt every Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC for Tech News Today, the latest tech news.
Every
Monday through Friday. And we will see you next time on Triangulation.